So we're looking at the life of Joseph. And last time we left him in prison. And we're going to pick him up there in Genesis 39 and read beginning with verse 21. Rather, verse 20. Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand, because the Lord was with him. Whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. You remember Joseph had had all kinds of problems. His brothers sold him as a slave to these traders that took him down to Egypt. They, in turn, sold him to Potiphar, an officer in the Pharaoh's army. And he was a good servant. He was a slave, but he was a good servant for Potiphar. And Potiphar advanced him. He made him really his steward, the one who was in charge of his whole property, his estate, ran things. He trusted Joseph. Joseph was a man that he realized was marked by integrity. You could depend on him. And so the Lord blessed Joseph. But then you remember that Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, wanted to have an affair with him, and Joseph rejected that. He said, no, I can't do this evil against God, this terrible wickedness. And he refused. And then one day she grabbed his coat. She said, lie with me. And when he refused, she grabbed the coat. She kept it. And then she cried out and she said, help, this man's trying to rape me. And the servants come running in. They say, look, here's the coat. That slave tried to rape me, and she had his coat to prove it. And so when her husband came home, she showed him the coat, and she said, you know, that slave you've had here, he's a wicked man. He tried to molest me. And of course, he's upset. He throws him into prison, charges him with this crime. So poor Joseph, here he's been doing what's right. He's been, completely honest and above board, and he ends up in prison. First he's a slave, now he's a slave and in prison on top of it. But while he's there, he just is very faithful, and that's the first way I want to describe him this morning. He's a faithful prisoner. He responded in this situation beautifully. The jailer recognized right away, well, now here's a fellow with a very positive attitude. Because you go to jail and most of the fellows in there are very negative. They're angry, they're bitter, they're full of resentment. In a jail you often see fights between men because they're just uptight and angry and so forth. And that's the kind of atmosphere there often is in a prison. It's a very angry, hostile, resentful atmosphere. Nobody can trust anybody. But here's Joseph. He's in prison, and the jailer recognized this guy's different. Here's a man, he isn't bitter, he isn't resentful, he's not hostile, he's not angry. He's just accepting what's come, and he's trying to do the right thing in every situation. And so the jailer actually made him a trustee and put him in charge of the jail. And so here he is as a faithful prisoner in charge now of the jail. It says the keeper didn't even look into anything under Joseph's hand. He didn't even check up on him. Had such complete faith in him that he just said, Joseph, take care of it. Whatever you do is fine with me. And it was an amazing situation. And it says the Lord was with him. Whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Beautiful, isn't it? Now, why was Joseph able to have such a spirit? It was simply because, basically, he had faith. If you have faith, you'll become faithful. You will be marked by integrity, by loyalty. Because you're trusting in God and you want to please God. And it was because he had faith in God that he could respond in this way. Things were going against him, constantly seeming to go against him. But Joseph didn't get angry. He didn't get mad at God. He didn't say, well, God, if this is the way you're treating me, I'm through with you. There wasn't any of that attitude. He accepted his circumstances. He didn't get angry against God. He just trusted in the Lord. I think he woke up in the morning and he said, Lord, this is your day. Help me to be a good prisoner today. Give me wisdom. I'm in a trustee position. Help me to do the right thing. Help me to be a good example to these other prisoners. Just a positive, beautiful example. Why? Because he believed in God. He wanted to please God. He realized what I'm doing, God sees. Doesn't matter what others think, but I want to please God. And he had just this confidence that God was with him and for him, even though all the circumstances were against him. As you go through life, do you have that assurance? You know, can you say, I know God is with me, I know I'm saved, I know I've accepted the Lord Jesus, and I know that regardless of the circumstances, God is with me and God is for me and it's going to work out all right. I trust God. I believe in God. Now, that was Joseph's attitude. And you can have that attitude if you've come to that point in life where you've come to know the grace of God and you've accepted the Lord Jesus and you're saved. And we need to ask ourselves the question this morning, is that true of me? Have I come to that point? I think Joseph could look back to a time when he came to believe in God. He came to believe that God loved him and that God was for him and he could trust God. And he says, I just want to live for God. God is with me. I know I'm right with him. And that's all that matters. A very positive, beautiful attitude, regardless of the circumstances of life. And Christians, you know, this is good to remember. Christians don't always have it easy. Joseph might have said, you know, if I just gone ahead and slept with that Potiphar's wife, with that woman, none of this might have happened. Everything might be going all right. He might have said, if I just done a little sinning and just played along with the world, it might be easier for me. Sometimes doing the right thing is costly. Sometimes you may not get a promotion in work if you do the right thing. They may ask you to do something dishonest. And as a Christian, you'll say, I don't feel free to do that. And they'll say, well, that's too bad then. We're not interested in you. I knew a man that worked for a used car agency down in Oklahoma years ago, and he was a Christian. He wanted to be honest when he'd write up a contract. He worked in the office and so forth. He wanted to be very honest and upfront with people, tell them how much it was costing, how much the interest was, you know, how much their payments were going to be, and he wanted them to realize, too, the condition of the car they were getting and so forth. His boss said to him, look, that's none of your business. I'll take responsibility for that. You just put down what I tell you on that piece of paper. But he was troubled about it. His name was Jack, and he was troubled about it, and he says, I know what he's doing is dishonest, and I feel I'm a part of it, even though I'm just working for him. And he didn't have, you know, peace about it. He finally ended up leaving the job. Joseph, you see, was doing the right thing, and it was costing him in many ways. And yet, through it all, he says, I'm going to please God, because God is the one I'm really concerned about pleasing. It's a wonderful attitude to have. Regardless of circumstances, if you've come to trust the Lord, you can say, well, God is with me, I'm going to do the right thing, and I'm going to trust him. And that was Joseph's attitude. He was a faithful prisoner. Now, in the next chapter, I call this Joseph the Dream Interpreter. Because, we'll start reading in chapter 40. It says, it came to pass after these things, the butler and baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, so they were in custody for a while. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, dreamed a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. Joseph came into them in the morning, looked at them, and saw they were very sad. So he asked them, he says, why are you sad? What's the problem? Well, they said, we've each had a dream, and we're confused, we're perplexed. What does the dream mean? So Joseph says to them, well, you know, interpretations belong to God, and I know God. Maybe I can help you. Tell me your dream. So the butler says, well, I was dreaming, and I saw a vine come up, and it had three branches. And as I watched it, he said, I saw the leaves sprout out on it. I saw the flowers. I saw the grape clusters form. And then I went over and I took the grapes and I pressed them into the cup for the king, for Pharaoh. And I gave it to him. Gave him the cup. Ah, Joseph said, that's a good dream. This is what it means. The three branches are 3 days. 3 days from now, the king's going to bring you out of this prison. And he's going to restore you to being the butler. Once again, you'll be able to serve him as his butler. And you will be the one who ministered to him. You'll be restored. And so the butler's beaming. He thinks, boy, this is great. What a great dream I've had. So the baker's a little encouraged. And Joseph says, what about your dream? Well, he said, I had dreamt I was standing there and I had three baskets on my head. He's pretty good at balancing things, I take it. The top one, he said, had all kinds of good baked things in it. And as I was watching, though, in my dream, the birds came down. They flew down, they landed on the basket, and they quickly ate all the good baked things in that basket. And I'm perplexed. What does my dream mean? I think Joseph's face must have fallen because he said, well, your dream isn't so good. He said, those three baskets represent 3 days. And he said, on the third day, Pharaoh's going to take you out of jail, too. But he's going to hang you. And the birds are going to come down and pick the flesh off your bones. I think Joseph, you know, told him that with a very sad face, but that was the dream. And the story says, on the third day, after he said this, in verse 20 of the chapter, it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants. He lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief butler to his butlership, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. He's in the place of privilege again. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Joseph said to the butler, he says, look, I told you the dream and it looks good for you. When you get to be back in the court of Pharaoh, put in a good word for me. He says, I'm not here justly. I haven't had a fair trial. The whole thing is wrong. I was sold here as a slave into Egypt, and put in a word for me to the king. But the butler, when he was restored, promptly forgot all about Joseph. Isn't that so human, though? You know, someone does something kind and good for us, and we think, oh, I want to remember that, and with you, we can forget so quickly. And that's just exactly what happened. So the butler's there. He's in the royal palace. He's in his place of privilege again. He's the chief butler. He serves the king, and Joseph is still in prison. 2 years go by. Joseph's still in prison. Then we come to chapter 41, and Pharaoh has some dreams. It says at the end of 2 full years, Pharaoh had a dream. Behold, he stood by the river. Suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine-looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then, behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking and fat cows, so Pharaoh woke up. Imagine he woke up with a jolt. He saw something happen that you don't usually see happen. I've never seen a cow attacking a cow and eating it. That's what he saw. He has his dream. Here are these 7 fat, you know, they look like cattle ready for slaughter. Fat, well-fed, beautiful cows. They come up from the river and they're feeding here in the meadow. And then he watches and there's 7 thin, gaunt, ugly cows. They're starving. They come up out of the river and they fall upon these fat cows and eat them up. And after they've eaten them, they're still thin and ugly. So Pharaoh wakes up. He's kind of shaken up. What in the world have I been dreaming? And then he goes back to sleep. And he has another dream. This time he doesn't see cows, but he sees 7 grain heads coming up on a stalk. And these are full, beautiful heads of grain. They've had lots of moisture. And the heads are just full of these lovely grains of whether it was wheat or barley or whatever. And then he watches, and he sees seven other heads of grain come up. And these look like they've gone through a drought. The grains are shriveled up. They're small. It's a very puny crop. And he watches, and the seven heads here that are so thin fall upon the fat heads, the full heads of grain, and eat them up, and they're gone. So he wakes up again, and he's very perplexed. He thinks this must have some significance or some meaning, but what in the world can it mean? So he calls in his magicians, he calls in his astrologers, and he calls in all the wise men, and he says, look, I've had some dreams, and I'm perplexed. I think it means something, but I don't know what in the world it means. And it's really got me bothered. Tell me what it means. So he tells them the dreams he's had. And the wise men, these are the leaders now, the intellectual leaders, we'll say, of this country, they say, boy, you've got us fooled. We don't know what it's about. We don't understand that dream. And then the butler says, oh, I remember my faults. He says, I remember. You know, 2 years ago, I was in prison, and there was I had a dream, and the baker had a dream, and we were perplexed. And then we asked we're talking to this slave who's a trustee there about our dreams, and he says, tell them to me. And we did, and he interpreted the dreams, and the butler says it happened just the way he said it did. He says, you restored me and you hanged the baker, just exactly what he said was going to happen. And the butler says, if you want to know what your dream means, I'd suggest you try to get a hold of him. And so Pharaoh sends to the prison. And you can imagine how Joseph felt. Here he is, you know, wearing his prison clothes, whether it was orange or whatever color it was, I don't know, but he's just working away there in the prison, minding his own business, and suddenly a messenger comes from the king and says, you're wanted in the king's palace. And he gets all excited. He thinks, what in the world can he want? He shaves, he dresses up with his best clothes, maybe he had to borrow some, and he comes to the king. Now, let's pick it up in verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have dreamed a dream. There's no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that you can understand the dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it's not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. In other words, Joseph says, look, there's nothing great about me, but God can, through me, give the interpretation of the dream. So now Pharaoh runs through the dreams once again. He says, here I am dreaming. Seven fat cattle come up, and then seven thin cattle come up after them. They fall on them. They eat up the fat cattle, and they're still thin and skinny. And then he says, I saw seven heads of grain, and then seven thin heads. And the thin heads eat up the seven fat heads of grain. He says, what in the world does this all mean? Well, Joseph says to him, the two dreams are really one. There's one message. And he says, God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. In other words, he says, this dream is from God, and I know God. You don't know God, but I do. And so here he says, I'll be able to tell you what the dream means because God's shown me. Now he says, this is what's going to happen. You're going to have 7 years of great plenty, good crops. 7 years when the crops are going to be great. But then he says you're going to have 7 years of famine, terrible famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten. And the famine is just going to waste your country. So he says, my suggestion to you is that you choose a very wise man, and you put him in charge of making preparations for this famine that's coming. Because 7 years away, we're going to have a famine, terrible famine. So you need to prepare. I'd suggest that you have this man maybe tax the people one-fifth every year. Get a fifth of their grain crop. Store it up. build granaries and really store up the grain for those years that are coming, because they're coming. Years of famine, 7 years of famine. And then you'll be prepared for the famine. You'll have a reserve. If you do this for 7 years, actually, you know, you would have more than enough. You'd have more than enough for 7 years. You'd have a reserve. Well, Pharaoh says, well, where can we find someone so wise to handle this project? And he looks at Joseph and he says, there's nobody wiser than you. I asked all the wise men in my kingdom to interpret the dream. They couldn't do it. You did. And since God has given you such wisdom, he says, you're the one that should be in charge of it. Imagine. A few minutes before, he's been in prison, a trustee, and thinking, I'll never get out of this place. And here the king now says to him, I think you ought to be in charge of this whole project, you know, because you're so wise. So here's what he says. Verse 40, you shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I've set you over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand, put it on Joseph's hand, clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, bow the knee! So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh. Without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him a wife, Asnath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Amazing. Here he is now. He's a wise ruler. Just before he was a faithful prisoner, now he's a wise ruler. What a transformation. What a change. He's out of the prison. Not only a free man. Pharaoh says, you're second to me. You ride in the second best chariot. And you have absolute authority over this country. He says, I'm the only one in this country who will be greater than you. You're second in command. And you take charge of this operation. You store up the grain. You make preparation for the famine. And here he gives him a gold chain. Gives him this chariot to ride in. Heralds run before him crying out, bow the knee, bow the knee. Here comes a ruler. The one who's been a slave is in this amazing position. You know, he was a very wise ruler. And I think he was a very compassionate ruler. We don't like adversity. We don't like difficulty. Joseph here now is 30 years of age. He was sold as a slave when he was about 18. So he'd been a slave now for about 12 years. He'd been in prison for some years. And he'd gone through all sorts of adversity and all sorts of difficulty. Now, this was preparation for him. I don't think Egypt ever had such a ruler as Joseph. They never had anyone who could so understand the problems of the common man. A lot of poor people in Egypt. There still are. It's a very poor country. There were millions of people that were just, you know, living on the level of slavery practically. But here's the ruler is one who has been a slave. You know, he can talk to anyone in Egypt and say, I understand where you're coming from. You know, I was a slave. I've been a slave. Someone could say, well, I was in prison. He could say, I understand that too. I've been in prison. He could understand all the circumstances they'd gone through. And the adversity he'd gone through prepared him in a wonderful way to be very useful and wise and compassionate as a ruler. Now, I want to just emphasize this a little bit, that when adversity comes in life, the way we respond to it will determine whether it's a growing experience or whether, in a sense, we just kind of wither up and dry up. Difficulties come in life. How are you going to respond to them? Now, there are many people get bitter. They get angry. They get frustrated. And when that happens, you don't grow. You don't make progress. I remember once talking to a guy in jail, and I'd seen him before, and this time I saw him and his hand was in a cast. I said to him, "What happened?" Well, he said, "I got so frustrated in this place, so angry," he said, "I hit the wall as hard as I could with my fist." It was a concrete wall. He broke his hand. Now, that, you see, he wasn't responding the right way to adversity. You start beating the concrete wall with your hand, you're hurting yourself. And this is what happens with some people. When things are not going right, they get angry and they begin to lash out and fight and not accept their circumstances at all. They may get bitter. They may begin to blame God. They may say, "God, why did you do this to me? Why is this happening to me?" And when that happens, there's no growth. There's no spiritual growth. But Joseph, through this whole period of time, is a growing person. He's becoming a wiser person, a more compassionate person, a more loving person, a more forgiving person. We're going to see that the next time we look at Joseph. But he becomes just a beautiful character. Now, how did he do it? How was he able to do that? Now, he wasn't superhuman. He was a sinner. He was made of the same stuff we are. He wasn't perfect. Was he able to do what he did in the midst of all of these adverse circumstances? Time when his brother sold him. You know, he could have been so angry at his brothers. He could have said, "I hate you. Why are you doing this to me?" He could have been vicious in his anger and hatred of his brothers. "How could you do such a thing? Take me and sell me away as a slave." He could have been angry about it. He could have been angry at Potiphar. He could have said, "You're believing your wife? She's lied to you? I wouldn't attack her. I wouldn't touch her. And she's framed me, and you're believing her. And you're not believing me, and I've served you faithfully. I've never done anything wrong. You know that." Potiphar believed the woman who lied. He's in prison. The years go by. And he can say, "I haven't had a trial. There's no justice. I may just rot in this place. I may die in this place. Where's the justice?" He might have even said, "God, why don't you do something? I mean, I've been trying to do what's right, and you just, here I am." He could have been bitter for many different reasons. But you don't read any of that in him. How could he do it? I think the answer was he had faith. He had faith. He believed in God. He'd come to know God. He'd come to trust the Lord. He believed God loved him. Joseph really believed that. He believed God was with him. He believed God's eye was upon him. And he believed, really, Romans 8:28. Even though Paul didn't write it for nearly 2,000 years, still he believed Romans 8:28, which says, "We know that all things work together for good to those that love God." And I think that Joseph during this time could say, "Lord, I love you and I want to do what's right. I don't understand all that's happening. But I just trust you. I trust you that in the end everything's going to work out. We know that all things work together for good." And this enabled him to have a sweet spirit, a forgiving spirit, a faithful spirit. So that when he was in prison there, the jailer said, "You know, you're the best prisoner I've had. And here, you take charge of the whole place. I trust you. You run the prison for me." Such integrity. Because he was a man who just believed the Lord, who trusted the Lord, who said, "Even though I don't understand some of these circumstances, I know you love me, and I know you're with me, and I'm going to do what's right." Beautiful spirit. And you know, I want to say to us, to all of us here, that you don't know the circumstances that may come in your life. The adversity, the difficulty, the problems, the trials that may come. We don't know what the future holds. But whether you come out of these circumstances as a person who is growing, who is becoming a better person, more loving, compassionate person, or not, will depend on how you react to the circumstances. And through them, are we going to trust the Lord? And are we going to say, Lord, I do trust you. I've accepted you as my Lord and Savior, and I believe you love me, and I believe you're with me. And regardless of circumstances, I know you're not going to give up on me. You're with me. And I'm going to trust you. And I believe in the end, everything's going to be all right. What a difference it makes. Joseph really had hope. When you have faith, you have hope. Joseph knew, and I think he knew, even if things don't get better in this life, ultimately I'm going to be with the Lord, and that's best. So that he had hope. And if you have hope, then you can keep going through circumstances that are difficult. If you don't have hope, why then you want to give up. For example, if Joseph had just thought, there is no God, nobody cares, when he was sold as a slave, he would have just, you know, wanted to kill himself. Or in prison, if he didn't believe there was a God, and if he didn't believe there was something more than this life, what was the point of living? But he was marked by faith. And so because of that, through these circumstances, these difficult circumstances, he was growing so that when he gets into this place of blessing now, he's a ruler. What a wise, compassionate, wonderful leader he was. So let me encourage you, those of us that are Christians, to in difficult circumstances, don't get bitter. Don't blame God. Don't feel God has deserted you. Don't feel God is against you. Believe, trust. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. We must believe He loves us. The proof of that, of course, is the cross. We cling to Him in faith. We say, Lord, I believe. At times we may say, help my unbelief, but I believe. And as we do that, and we realize that it's better on ahead, there's going to be blessing. In this life, there'll be blessing, and then ultimately we go to be with the Lord, and Paul says that's far better. So there's hope. We as Christians have hope, and we need to realize that. Joseph did through these difficult circumstances. And the thing we need to ask ourselves this morning is, do I have faith? Have I received Christ as my Lord and Savior? And can I face life with its problems, its difficulties, with real faith, knowing God is with me and for me, and it's going to be all right, regardless of what happens in this life? That was the kind of faith Joseph had. We're visiting a cousin of my wife's recently. She's a woman in her 30s. She has bone cancer, and it doesn't look good. But she knows the Lord. And you know, through difficult times like that, she has a couple of children. She doesn't want to die. But through difficult times like that, the only thing that you have is faith in the Lord. In the fact that He loves you. And in the fact that when you leave this life, it's better on ahead. And Joseph had that kind of faith. I hope this morning that you can